And indeed knoweth me, there is one power, and only one power, and that power is infinite mind, that power is infinite light and life, and is moving through each of us right here, right now, as we move into this time together of recognition of better ideas, a greater way of living, and the truth as it is revealed to us and through us. We move into this with ease, with grace, and with joy. We let it be our experience, and so it is. So thank you all for being here. Welcome. I'm here to remind you that such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity, so am I, and so it is. And the wonderful Reverend Angela will share with us some reading and who knows what when you put her up here and turn her loose. Thank you.
Well, technology is going to have me behave this morning. I couldn't get this song up. So I do have the lyrics, though. I had my grandson come in with me this morning. And, I'm a movie buff, and all the Christmas movies and decorations are going up. I see people decorating their homes, and the lights are populating. But there was a song that came on a movie recently that I wanted to play for you this morning, but I actually have the lyrics, so I'm going to read it to you. It's by the prophet Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes. This song came out in 1975. Some of you weren't even born yet. But I was in high school when this song came out. I was in the 10th grade. It says, "Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war, and poverty. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. 'Cause they're the ones who coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, you teach the very best you can. The world won't get no better if you just let it be. The world won't get no better. We got to change it, yeah. Just you and me." And if you will take the time to listen to that song more, because it's got so many powerful words in it that exist almost 40 years later. So as we're out in the world, you are the change we wish to see. So hopefully this morning, through the opportunity to hear the music and the song and the message, that when we're out there doing our thing in the world, we're not acting like what we don't want to be, but we're acting like what we want to be. And if we start acting like the mirror that's out there in front of us, we stop. This might not be your song, but it may be the song. Let me play this one. I do have to misbehave a little. I'm a Peanuts fan, so all the Charlie Brown stuff is coming on, so. So whatever song it is that you need to play that takes you into a higher consciousness, a higher spirit, play it. They've got Charlie Brown Christmas coming on. Play that. That'll take you back about 50 years. But it's working with the law, and we know God is the law, and that's the one power that we always speak of. So I would like to close before treatment with Raymond Hollowell. And it's all about our thinking and our working with the law. So whatever jumps out at me is what I'm going to read. I read this last week, and I'm going to read it again. Our thoughts travel 930,000 times faster than the sound of our voice. No other force or power in the universe yet known is as great or as quick. It is a proven fact scientifically that the mind is a battery of force, the greatest of all the known elements. So let's use our minds and our hearts powerfully during not just this season, but all seasons. And with that, I'm going to take you into treatment. Remember to breathe while you're out there shopping and playing and visiting family. And if you don't know the words, the breath and the songs that are in your heart can do them. But these are some words I will share with you. As you breathe in and out, that substance that's readily available for us, we don't have to go looking for it. It is because God is. And each and every one of us is a magnificent expression of this amazing, fantastic power. This law works through you and it works through me. We're the light that shines. So as we plug in and sparkle during this season, we light the way to peace, joy, and happiness. And the peace that we want to see in the world really starts with us. So sing your song loud and clear so all can hear. You make a difference. And as we make this difference and things embark upon our lives that seem to bring pain or hurt or sorrow or sadness, all we do again is stop and breathe and remember that song that's deep in our heart, and it wells up in us and starts to come out through our faces and our eyes and our smiles. And we return to that inherited right to be happy, whole, and complete. We release this knowing that the power within is also without. Give thanks for all things, all day, every day. And the more that occurs, the more happiness and thankfulness will occur. The universe has got us, got within us, and we know it, and we receive it, and so it is.
You know, some people walk into our lives gently and quietly and show up and make a difference. Other people come into our lives loud and full and noisy and obnoxious, and there's no way to avoid them. First time I heard our speaker today, I was at a minister's conference, and I heard this absolutely from the bottom of herself, laughter, that you could hear all over the social area where we were socializing. And I'm like, who in the world is that? And the person next to me said, oh, Jersey's in the house. So today we are honored and pleased to have Reverend Jersey Girl to come and speak for us, to us, with us. She has been here this weekend because she is a member of the Leadership Council and Centers for Spiritual Living. She is the vice president of the Leadership Council and has come to visit to be with us. She did a workshop yesterday with our practitioners. And she's also the founding minister of the North Jersey Center for Spiritual Living that's been there 16 years. She was 9 years old when she started it. And has been a huge, positive, wonderful influence for me. She has been a prayer partner at times. She reminds me to take life more lightly when I get into my heavy doldrum seriousness, all which I can do. And I am just thrilled to be able to share her with you this morning. So let's give a wonderful Midtown welcome to Reverend Michelle Wadley.
It's a new system. Oh, I'm on. Good. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's fun to be here. And I wish that wasn't my reputation, but it is. So I might as well embrace it. Back in the day of being at a Sillamore, Sillamore people? Not that many. Okay. So I have ruined many a recording with my laughter. I mean, years later, we'd be listening to a recording, and I'm like, oh, my God, I was there, and that was my laugh. But you know what? If that's what you remember about me, so be it. Because life being light is an important thing. Matter of fact, this morning when I was getting mic'd up, and we were speaking with Patrick, and the name of my talk today is Push, Pray Until Something Happened. Now, I know ever since we did the mark, we spent $250,000 to have the marketing people say, it's okay to use the word prayer and not just treatment, right? The truth is, I prefer the word treatment, but the acronym would have been TUSH. And I thought, maybe not. And then Patrick was offering to put music under my treatment, and I said, do you call that noodling? He said, no, I call it tinkling. So between his tinkling and my tush, we thought, no, we're just not going to do that. You know, we're not going to do that today. So pray until something happens. It's not the first time I've spoken about this subject, but it is of great importance to me. I see treatment as a science and an art. The first part of my life was with, I was truly gifted because one of my early influences was, my spiritual teacher, her name was Rita Sperling, and she was a self-taught minister, but then she got influenced, and some of you old-time religious scientists, I hope, know this name, by Irvin Seal, Dr. Irvin Seal from the Church of the Truth. Dr. Seal was one of those people, when he walked in the room changed because of the level of his consciousness. Matter of fact, one time we were running a seminar and I was always there helping out, and he walked in and he came up to the front when we had our sound system, and the sound system wasn't working properly. And I knew he was interrupting it. And I walked up and I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, Dr. Seal, you gotta move back. And sure enough, he moved back and the sound system worked again. Because some of them, not me, let's get real, but some individuals walk in that electromagnetic, energetic consciousness that does affect things even without speaking. And he was one of them. So I'm really blessed to have had him as an early influence and can say he was a teacher. And that's really the beginning of me learning about the power of prayer and power of treatment and healing, although we didn't call it either. In those days, the modality we used was hypnosis. And if you don't know this, if you were to wire up someone in treatment and wire up somebody doing hypnosis, the same bells and whistles would go off, the same lights would light up, because it touches the same place within us. I also want to say that being here on this stage, I feel a little bit like I'm cheating to be sitting here with Dr. Bob here and with John DePalma and with Paul in the room. It's a little bit intimidating because they are my seniors. They have served as mentors and the way showers. So for me to be here during this time is a little like, but I'll rise because that's what we do as religious scientists, don't we? We rise. Because we put our foot forward and we put our intention behind that foot, and then we do what we need to do. So one of the subjects, and we spoke about this yesterday, a subject that I speak about often when anyone will sit and listen long enough, to be perfectly honest, because I think it's that important, is the conversation that is now really getting some steam, and that is the conversation about spiritual bypass. And I bring it to you because, at least if I've said it, you've heard it. And then if it comes across your path again, okay, maybe you'll decide to pay attention to it, or maybe you'll just dismiss it completely. That's the freedom that we have in this movement. You know, we know that we don't have to take hook, line, and sinker what anyone says. That's the freedom that we have as religious scientists, is to believe it or subscribe to what is being said or not. But because I believe in treatment so completely, and man has, you know, you're looking at someone at the beginning of my science of mind experience. Even with the knowledge and the introduction to life principles that I had had, it didn't prevent me from totally screwing up the middle of my life. Somehow, I still managed to do that. So by the time I entered the science of mind community, I was the second time around, I was single, getting pregnant. I was just about to get pregnant after moving to the community. I kind of had a job, you know. There was finally a couple of years there where I did well, but I was on the balls of my butt. You know that statement? Okay. Maybe that's a Jersey statement. I actually said it differently to be nice. So I knew what it was like to go to the food store and put money on that belt and then not have enough money to pay for it. And then have people, on more than one occasion, had people who were watching me who couldn't bear, because sometimes I'd be near tears, who couldn't bear witnessing this, take money out of their pocket and give it to me. I one time had a store clerk, this beautiful young little African-American, not little, tall, brazen African-American woman who worked there, take money out of her pocket to help me. So that was my prescience of my life. And so for me, my life was saved through the application of this teaching. And I'm not talking money being the savior. I'm talking about my self-confidence and the full application, the full out application. Two out of my three sons have had spinal meningitis. Now, the fear that strikes in a mother's heart when your children have something that seriously, and especially when one is 3,000 miles away, there's only one thing you could do. What is it? Pray. Because it took me 3 days to get there by the time I found out about it. So I know about the application of treatment. And yet what I see is very often, like, let's imagine, and we did this yesterday, let's imagine that whatever you're dealing with, the issue, or just your desired outcome, might be a new job, might be a new relationship, might be a illness that you're dealing with. Let's imagine that that's here. And that the treatment is here, where you want to go is here, the solution. Sometimes we come from what is to what we want to be without dipping into the cause. There's often we are not looking deep enough into the subconscious at cause in order to pull up from the roots. And Holmes was clear about this. We have to dip into the roots, the root of the root, and get the cause. And he says, unless one is willing to surrender that mental cause, healing will not happen. But if we go direct, we keep trying to go too quickly from here to here. Am I being clear? If we try to go too quickly from here to here, what happens is very often we do a very surface treatment. And then we find out that which lived as cause shows up as something else. Have you ever had that happen? It shows up as another illness, or shows up as another episode, or shows up as another husband or wife, right? Because we didn't uproot what had to be uprooted. All we did is we skimmed over. You know, and I mean, treatment requires regular attention anyway. There's no way that it does not. I mean, you don't take a vitamin one time and assume you're done. You don't brush your teeth one time and assume your teeth are clean. There are certain things that are forever practice. And I mentioned yesterday, and I want to mention it again today, because I just, you know, it was a great lesson. There was a minister that the elders in the room will remember. I think he got his doctorate, Reverend Dr. Tom Johnson. And Tom Johnson used to say that you treat so you don't have to treat. Now, as an arrogant young religious scientist, I'm like, oh. But as a maturing religious scientist, I got what he said. And so what I like in that too, and we made this reference yesterday. Do you want me to stop moving around so you can stop moving the camera? Okay. I just wanted to ask. I don't tend to stay in place very well. So I tend to liken it first the Stephen Covey refers to as growing your circle of influence. So I take that as growing my circle of consciousness. And I think of it back in the old days as a hoop skirt. So with those, imagine walking in a room with a hoop skirt. The hoop skirt will enter the room before you do. See, consciousness is like that. When you grow consciousness, it doesn't require that you stop and treat for every little individual, little this and a little bit of that. Because you are living in the consciousness. So in the textbook, as we know, Dr. Holmes says, you only treat once and then you're done. Really? Don't we, most of us, return Because then someplace else, he says, treat until something happens. And I love it at the workshop yesterday. We came to agreement that we treat until we experience a shift in consciousness. So I asked the group, how do you know you're having that shift in consciousness? How do you measure that shift in consciousness? And we came to an agreement. It's because we feel it. We physically feel a shift, a sensation or something that happens, and we get, oh, I'm confident in what I've just spoken, which is a beautiful thing. Which leads me to my next point. In addition to spiritual bypass, we have also, to some degree, cut our head off from our body in this teaching. Have you noticed that? We have. Some of us have been so mental. And trust me, if I had to choose between head and heart, I'd choose my head because my heart's like a 5-year-old running amok. So I would choose my head because I can depend upon my intelligence to make the right decision. My heart, I don't know. I've been married a couple times, so I know that it hasn't always made the right choices. And I've made lots of mistakes. And those were from that place. But we have a body, but we're not our body. But we can't deny that we have our body. Spirit depends upon your body to express itself. Your body, without spirit, is fodder for the earth. Your body, with spirit, becomes this animation of possibility. The essence of who and what we are must show up as your physical body. So it's about time that we bring both together, working in accord, so we start to really acknowledge, because what I see happens in this movement, and now I'll bring the body and spiritual bypass together, what I see happen, not only in religious science, but in the unity movement, is I'll ask you, how are you doing today? And you'll be going, oh, fine. And yet, in truth, you might not be fine. But you feel obligated to say you're fine. And when we deny the human reality of our human experience, what happens is we are also denying that root cause that must be unearthed, uprooted, neutralized, cast out back into the nothingness from whence it came. Are we at the mercy of it? Are we at the mercy of the cause? No. Say great confidently, no. No, not now, not ever. We are never at the mercy of it. But only to the degree that we wake up, only to the degree that we grow our self-awareness do we cease being at the mercy of it. It does call for us to have a level of awareness before we can negate it. It is easy for you and I to say that this thing is not in charge of me, and yet it's more powerful. So you're not at the mercy of remembering. You're not at the mercy of knowing the details. You're not. But it's more powerful even when you do, because then you know what you're seeking to uproot. Is that clear? So in order to be more potent in the stance of the science of mind, I am going to clearly and definitively treat, including my subconscious, on a regular basis. And I think, I don't know you, maybe all of that happens here all the time, but in my travels, and I work a lot with practitioners, I do a lot of training with practitioners, but I find that by the time some people get to the practitioner training, they're not talking about the subconscious enough. They're not. It's a missing in the conversation. You know, and God, I love Troward. You guys love Troward, Thomas Troward? Oh, man. I remember first trying to read that. I'm like, what the heck is this? And it took me, I'm not an academic. So it took me third time around to take that course and read that book. And I remember walking up to my minister, Reverend Frankie. I'm like, I got it. I understand it now. But it took me 3 times. But then the brilliance of it, and what I love every time I teach that course is it reminds me, because I love that this sweet and simple beginning of that time when he first acknowledges that there's nothing solid. Oh, how cute that must have been. right? Now we have quantum physicists that are so surpassed that conversation. But at one point, they were just acknowledging that this is not solid. It looks pretty solid. Does it look solid? And I love bringing out to my students, what keeps this lectern being a lectern? What keeps those chairs being chairs if everything is moving? Can you get the importance of that question? And my answer always is, your agreement that this is an lectern, your agreement that that's a chair. So it's the intelligence with which we approach creation that keeps it all being what it is. So, Emma Curtis Hopkins. God, another thing I struggled with. I love the struggle. Because the struggle is a wake up, right? The struggle, you know, if you're struggling, you're stretching. And you guys study Emma Curtis Hopkins? Is that common down here? Yes? A little bit? Okay. She says there's no matter. What? What do you mean there's no matter? And she says there's no death. What? Until you get that there's more space than there is matter. That there's more space than anything that is ever real as matter, which blows the human mind. So if I believe that intelligence and agreement keeps this being what it is, and if I agree, and I do, that there is no matter, then I have to agree that there is only one time. And this Troward also pointed out beautifully. What's the only time? It's only now. So sometimes some of the people also entering the practitioner classes, they do a lot of this will be good. No, this is good now. This is happening now. This is perfect now. This is whole now. I am healthy now. This is old. This is not new to you. I understand that. But it's so good to revisit the precious and sacred parts of the teaching that keep us speaking to reality. Man, I can't stand when a practitioner gets up and these words will ripple out. No, actually they don't ripple out. What is known here is known everywhere, and it's known everywhere immediately, perfectly, in this moment, in this place. Because if there's only one, it's known now, it's known here, yes? Right? Do we agree with that? So when we speak from that place, we're speaking from a place of power. That is a place of power. So when you tie together, I mean, we have a body, but you're not your body, correct? You're that which animates your body. You're the essence which incarnated in this life from a place of pure love, pure perfection, and then it showed up as each one of us. What happens after you're born, that's a whole other deal. Okay. So to acknowledge the use of the body temple, though, is to acknowledge it as a natural biofeedback machine. It is imperative that we pay attention because our body is that which is telling us at all moments, am I in principle? Now, I call this practicing radical honesty. Because in practicing radical honesty, I'm not going to try to pretend to be what I'm not. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I'm one of those people, if you ask me how I'm feeling, I'm going to give you a true answer. I'm not going to give you a metaphysical, you know, wash over what I'm feeling. I might not give you the details because you might not really want them. You might just be giving me an obligatory, how are you? So it would be rude for me to dump my reality upon you at that moment. But the fact is that in practicing radical honesty, I am paying attention to the all of my being because it's my entire being that is feeding back to me, am I in principle? Am I in principle? And as metaphysicians, you know the term. Hopefully you know what that means, beyond the physical. Sometimes we've made it mean not physical. You get the difference? I mean, there's no matter, right? We are essence in this form. So we are to look beyond what we believe is the reality. Isn't that why we close our eyes when we do? Well, maybe you don't. I close my eyes during spiritual mind treatment. Why? Because our eyes distract us. And the quantum physicists have proven today, not exactly today, they've been proving for a while, that which we observe, we affect. You know that, right? So what matters is, how am I observing you? I observe you through my consciousness. I observe you through my belief system. I observe you through my experiences. This is why hurt people hurt people and healed people heal people. And the more I raise the scope of my being, and the more I raise and increase my consciousness, when I look at you, I assure you, I am seeing your perfection. You might not know that about me yet, but it would only take a few minutes for you to be in my company that you would get, I see you, and I see the perfection of you, and I see the leader in you, and I see the health in you. So what happens when we do this for each other? If I see you healthier than you're seeing yourself, it helps you to rise up. Do you get that? It's important, because then we support breaking the glass, self-imposed glass ceilings that we've each created for ourselves. So through observation, I want to observe you from a place of wholeness, of cause, from my God center. So I begin to create with the consciousness and my hoop skirt as I walk into the room, then I know that all you have to do is come fairly close to me, and the vibration of my being affects you. Because what I won't do, what I'm committed to not doing in my life absolutely completely, is I will not acknowledge you're less than. And yesterday we spoke about that we have two choices always. And you know, if someone comes, we spoke about when someone wants to complain, if they come to you to complain, you better look at why they're coming to me. Do I have a listening for that complaint? Wow, have I created a listening for your gossip? So be careful. If someone comes to you to complain, bitch, moan, gossip, you ask yourself, huh, why me? What makes them think that I'll listen? Okay, just a little hint there. So so we created two distinctions. I can either collude with your limitation or collaborate with your possibility. What do you want me to do? No colluding. And I tell my, and this goes, yeah, please, no colluding, ever. And this goes to worry. Treatment is, I mean, we know treatment. Oh my God, treatment is this incredible, beautiful tool and this incredible, beautiful art form. So's worry. Misused. And I believe that real practicing religious scientists have probably stepped beyond that. But every once in a while we slip. Don't just slip every once in a while. And I say to my people, if you think I'm not well, please don't even think about me. Because I don't want your worry in me. I don't want you carrying me in your consciousness in any way other than I am whole, perfect, and complete, moving up, fully expressing in life in the most good and glorious ways. That's how I want you to think of me. And then as communities, that's why we come together. We come together in a state of resonance. So religious scientists come together to see that state of perfection. So we treat until we shift consciousness, that beautiful freeing element of possibility that has been given such gorgeous language. If some of you have never attended that, I want to put a little commercial And Lee, I think it's your leadership that's been creating it, the adult school facilitated this morning by Reverend Angela. If you have not taken time to get here at 10 in the morning to be in that conversation, you're missing a valuable conversation. It gets so juicy to be living in and conversing around principle that you can't hide from it. It's really a powerful thing. When I first attended religious science, remember I said before, my computer keeps shutting off, I have to put it back on. My initial experience was hypnosis. But my problem is that I don't like processes. I don't like delineated processes. And yet when I learn treatment, right, you learn it in the form of steps. Well, I've come to teach it in my community a little bit different. I call them the elements of treatment. Because I have no problem if you want to start with gratitude. It's about shifting consciousness. Start where you want. But for me, there is nothing more empowering than being willing to surrender in that moment. And surrender is a good thing. It's not a thing of failure. You want to see how you hold that word in your consciousness. For me, surrender is about giving over to the power that lives beyond me. And so, Patrick, if you'll join me. I know you're gonna tinkle. I couldn't help it. And so I'd like to offer a treatment, and sometimes I wish I was a good old-fashioned Baptist minister, you know, with the sweat pouring off their face, and they're screaming, and, you know, somebody comes up and dries their sweat. God, I love the passion of that. I don't get anywhere close to that. But the impassioned treatment, you will get further always, I will get further always, with conviction and faith. We don't need a polite treatment. God's not looking for you to be polite. God's looking for you to be bold and brazen and plugged in and fired up and so in alignment with calling forth the experience that you want that I'm sure when you treat and you treat with conviction, somewhere someone is celebrating the freedom of your being. So if we can, let's just go into a treatment. Oh, there is a power and a presence and a love so grand, so glorious. It is sacred. It is holy. It is stunningly beautiful. It shows up by means of this word as every thought that I think, every breath that I breathe. It shows up here. It shows up now because there's only this moment. And as I speak this word here for everyone present, I declare that anything at all that has ever existed at the level of the subconscious for any single one of us that has been known as limitation, that has been known as fear, that has been known as not enough, I declare right now that the entire collective is uprooted, cast out, neutralized, never again to be the authority, never again to be the identity for any single one of us listening. And as that space is made clear, there is an immediate download, divine influx, as Ernest Holmes would call it, of the power and the presence of the love, the self-confidence and self-love and self-acceptance and worthiness and self-value. And that fills that space. That becomes the authority of each and every one of us. That becomes our identity. That becomes the power that has its way with us, not separate, not ever, but the power through, the power as. I declare right here and right now how sweet it is to be willing to be moved, to be willing to accept, to be willing to allow this influence to be the influence that has its way here. Mother, Father, God, Spirit, life, energy, by any word, I am moved, I am motivated. My entire being takes on this word. And the I of me, which is the I of each one of us, accepts and allows this shift, accepts and allows this evolution of possibility, accepts and allows and encourages each one of us to see each other in a state of absolute perfection every moment of every day. This is good and so very good. With bountiful, bountiful, bountiful gratitude, unending gratitude, I surrender this word to universal law, to universal mind. I surrender it to love, and I surrender it to that awe of life that is always everywhere present. For this I am grateful, and I surrender this word, and I allow it to be so. And so it is. Thank you. Go down.
Thank you, Reverend Jersey Girl. All right. All right. So we have a lot of exciting things happening right now. But first of all, I wanted to ask you a question. I don't know about you, but my mailbox and my email box and all of my places to receive information have just been piling up and filling up with every nonprofit on the planet asking for money right now. It is the season of giving, right? So I just want to get a plug in for CSR Midtown. Yeah, thank you. We're at the end of the year. We heal people. We cure cancer. We change things. Don't forget us. Thank you. I'm not going to say any more than that.